You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
The IT world used to be simpler. You only had to secure and manage environments that you controlled. Then came new technologies and new ways to work. Now, employees, apps, and networks are everywhere. This means poor visibility, security gaps, and added risk. That's why Cloudflare created the first-ever connectivity cloud. Visit cloudflare.com to protect your business everywhere you do business. The DOJ indicts four Iranian nationals on hacking charges. Legislation to ban or force the sale of TikTok heads to the president's desk. A Russian hacking group claims a cyber attack on an Indiana water treatment plant. A roundup of dark web data leaks. Mandiant monitors dropping dwell times. Bcrypt bogs down brute forcing. North Korean hackers target defense secrets. In our Learning Layer segment, hosts Sam Meisenberg and Joe Kerrigan continue their discussion of Joe's ISC2 CISSP certification journey. On our Industry Voices segment, Tony Valecha, CEO of Cyberproof, joins us to explore some of the pain points that CISOs and CIOs are experiencing today and how they can improve their cyber readiness. And ransomware may leave the shelves of Sweden's liquor stores bare. It's Wednesday, April 24th, 2024. I'm Dave Bittner, and this is your CyberWire Intel Briefing. Thanks for joining us here. It is great to have you with us. The U.S. government has indicted four Iranian nationals for hacking operations targeting various U.S. entities, including the Treasury and State Departments, defense contractors, and two New York-based companies, allegedly for the Iranian Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps. They face charges of computer fraud and wire fraud, with potential sentences ranging up to 20 years for each count of wire fraud. Additionally, the Treasury Department has sanctioned these individuals, and the State Department is offering up to $10 million for information leading to three of the men. The operations involved two IRGC front companies and lasted from 2016 to at least April 2021, primarily targeting defense contractors and other U.S. businesses. Congress has passed legislation mandating the sale or ban of TikTok due to national security concerns related to its Chinese ownership by ByteDance. The bill, which received strong bipartisan support, was part of a larger package that also included aid for Israel, Ukraine, and Taiwan. The Senate approved it with a significant majority, and President Biden is expected to sign it into law. Once enacted, ByteDance will have about 9 months, extendable by 90 days, to divest TikTok. The legislation highlights the serious concerns about potential Chinese government access to American data through TikTok, despite the app's economic and cultural influence in the U.S. TikTok disputes these claims and plans to legally challenge the legislation, arguing it infringes on free speech rights. The move marks a significant step in the U.S. government's ongoing scrutiny over foreign technology influences and data security. A hacker group known as the Cyber Army of Russia has claimed responsibility for a cyber attack on the Tipton Wastewater Treatment Plant in Indiana, as revealed in a video on their Telegram channel. Despite the group's claim, local officials confirmed the attack but stated that the facility continued to operate normally with minimal disruption. The group, which has been linked to the Russian state actor Sandworm by security firm Mandiant, has a history of targeting U.S. infrastructure and portrays itself as a hacktivist collective. The true extent of the damage from the attack remains unclear as investigations are still ongoing. The SOC Radar Dark Web team discovered a database leak from Honda Vietnam containing sensitive customer information. This leak is part of a broader collection of cyber threats the team has discovered being offered on dark web markets, including a new insider information service and a malware service which endangers corporate and email security. Moreover, sensitive data of Chinese citizens using Huawei and iPhones obtained from major carriers is being marketed. Additional detected threats include unauthorized network access for sale to a French construction company and data from critical U.S. airports also for sale. Mandiant's M-Trends 2024 report indicates a notable improvement in global cybersecurity, with the median dwell time for attackers within systems dropping to just 10 days in 2023 from 16 days in 2022. This reduction is attributed to a higher proportion of ransomware incidents and better internal detection capabilities, as organizations have enhanced their systems defenses. Despite this progress, the report highlights a rise in the use of zero-day exploits by attackers to evade detection and extend their presence in compromised systems. Notably, the Asia-Pacific region saw the most significant decrease in dwell time, while the EMEA region experienced a slight increase. The report stresses the importance of maintaining vigilant threat hunting and effective incident response strategies to counter these evolving cyber threats. The latest analysis on brute force password cracking from Hive Systems now focuses on passwords hashed with bcrypt, shifting from the less secure MD5 algorithm. Using NVIDIA GeForce RTX 4090 GPUs, the study found that passwords under 7 characters can be cracked within hours. Comparatively, weak 11-character passwords now take 10 hours to crack with bcrypt, a significant improvement from being instantly broken last year. Strong passwords exceeding 8 characters, featuring a mix of numbers, symbols, and mixed-case letters, remain secure for months or even years. Hive's results highlight the robustness of bcrypt for protecting well-constructed passwords and caution against the predictability of non-randomly generated passwords, which can be cracked much faster. South Korean police have exposed a substantial hacking campaign by North Korea that compromised defense secrets from up to 83 defense contractors and subcontractors over a year. The campaign, led by North Korean state-backed groups Lazarus, Kimsuki, and Andariel, successfully extracted sensitive data from 10 companies between October 2022 and July 2023. Many targeted companies were oblivious to the breaches until notified by police. Techniques used included exploiting email vulnerabilities to download files without authentication, hijacking accounts with poor password practices, and malware introduction through compromised third-party maintenance accounts. Meanwhile, North Korean hackers exploited the update mechanism of eScan antivirus to deploy the Guptaminer malware on large corporate networks, according to a report by Avast. This sophisticated malware, hidden within normal antivirus updates, gains system-level access through DLL sideloading, using eScan's legitimate operations. It then fetches additional payloads, establishes persistence, and manipulates DNS, among other malicious activities. Guptaminer also checks for the presence of specific security and monitoring tools to avoid detection and executes on machines with sufficient hardware resources to evade sandbox detection. Despite remediation efforts by eScan, including more secure update protocols, infections persist, suggesting some systems remain vulnerable. Avast links Guptaminer to the North Korean group Kimsuki based on operational similarities. Coming up after the break, on our learning layer, Sam Meisenberg and Joe Kerrigan continue Joe's CISSP certification journey. In our Industry Voices segment, Tony Valecha, CEO of Cyberproof, joins us to explore some of the pain points that CISOs and CIOs are experiencing today. Stay with us.
Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging and time-consuming. Enter Vanta. Vanta gives you one place to centralize and scale your security program. Quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more. You can leverage Vanta's market-leading trust management platform to unify risk management and secure the trust of your customers. Plus, use Vanta AI to save time when completing security questionnaires. CyberWire daily listeners can get $1,000 off by going to vanta.com/cyber. That's vanta.com/cyber.
In the dynamic world of enterprise security, identity architects and IT leaders face a major challenge. Growth by repeated acquisitions multiplies the complexity of everything. Multiple IDPs, MFA providers, policy engines that all need to coexist. This can lead to fragmented user identities and policies that create security vulnerabilities and add access friction. Strata Identity solves this. Now you can decommission unneeded IDPs and consolidate the ones you'd like to keep without rewriting apps or disrupting users, engineers, and app owners. Plus, Strata's modular architecture makes it easy to integrate with any identity provider without manual maintenance and coding. Join the ranks of cybersecurity leaders using identity orchestration. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your top identity security priorities, and receive a pair of complimentary AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Step into a new era of identity management at strata.io/cyberwire. On our latest Learning Layer segment, host Sam Meisenberg joins my Hacking Humans co-host Joe Kerrigan to continue their discussion of Joe's CISSP certification journey.
Welcome back to another Learning Layer segment. We're joined again by Joe Kerrigan as he gets ready for his CISSP. So Joe, since last time we talked, you were making good momentum.
Yep.
You finished domain two and you're on to domain three. So what do you, very different flavor of material, domain two to domain three. Domain three is a little more technical.
Yes.
So how did that feel?
I love the cryptography stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that was all... very, very native to me.
Yeah.
They're not teaching you how to be a cryptographer.
Right, right.
So don't worry. You don't have to worry. Understand how, why factoring large prime, large
prime
products of prime numbers is N hard.
Yeah.
You don't need to know that.
Yeah.
In fact, that's the only thing I really understand about asymmetric cryptography.
Sure.
Is
sure.
Very large prime numbers multiplied together.
Okay.
That's one algorithm.
And also, while we're on the topic, I remember that you're a crypto guy, because when we talked about the diagnostic, maybe even for like the CC exam, you were mad because there's technically a wrong answer choice.
I was mad. Right. I was mad about a wrong answer on the CC exam that I don't think should have been wrong.
Right.
And it was because it was, how do you ensure integrity? Right. And they said, well, you have, the answer was hash.
Right.
Right. But if you just send a hash,
yeah,
and I intercept that message, I'm changing the hash as well. So you have to encrypt that hash with your private key.
Right.
And that becomes the digital signature.
Right.
That verifies.
Exactly.
So you need both.
Exactly.
You need a hash and a private key. They talk about that here.
Right. Exactly. I was about to say, it's like almost a perfect tie-in, because those who might be studying along with Joe, you know, the reason why that it ensures non-repudiation is because, as you said, since it's encrypted with the sender's private key,
right?
What's the only thing in the world that could decrypt it?
It's the sender's public key.
Which means it had to be encrypted by the sender's private key. And who's the only person in the world with sender's private key? The sender.
The sender.
That's how you know hopefully, it came from the person.
Anyway. Yeah, right. Hopefully. In theory, that's the way it is. And if somebody right. breaches your private keys, then yeah. that's a problem, of course. But let's not assume that we're talking about that kind of error. We're talking about an error, you know, a situation where all the key management is happening well and the system yeah. is working as it should be. You're correct. That provides non-repudiation.
So, Joe, what's interesting is you have a background in crypto. You're probably really strong on domain three. Yet you told me before we started recording that you watched all of the videos in the short video library and you watched the longer videos.
Yeah, this is the way I'm going through the course.
So that's fine. I will say it's probably, you know, not how most people do it.
Okay.
Which, again, whatever works for different people. But can you tell me about, I guess, just walk us through the difference between the short videos and the longer ones, and then maybe what you're getting from each when you go through it.
Okay, so I'll tell you what I'm doing with each. Mm-hmm. First, with the short videos, I just have in my Google Drive, I have mm-hmm. a series of notes files
yep.
for each domain. So far, I have domains 1, 2, and 3 mm-hmm. as note files. And I'm going through these videos. They're in a logical order, mm-hmm. and sometimes there are multiple videos under a topic, and I'm just going through, and as I'm going through, I'm taking notes, mm-hmm. And I'm probably generating at least 5 or 6 pages of notes per domain, mm-hmm. But that's also kind of helping me as I learn through it. Once I get through the domain, then I go and I look at the video that is you know, the lecture that talks about that domain. There's just okay. one, like usually 1 hour lecture mm-hmm. that goes over the content of the domain.
Yep.
And that is also paired with a book, mm-hmm. you know, a notebook that's in the materials mm-hmm. that I've printed out.
Nice.
And I'm going through now with a piece of paper and a mechanical pencil, writing nice. Down things, notes in this
yep.
as well.
Yep.
So, I don't have any sources on this, but I have educators who have told me, so I'm going to believe the educators,
okay.
that writing things down with your hand and writing things down by typing them are two different modalities.
Yep.
So you're going to be using different parts of your brain, which means that you stand a better chance of recalling the data. So I'm mm-hmm. doing it twice mm-hmm. for that reason. I'm mm-hmm. not, yes, I'm going through all the material, and you've said that that's not how most people use the course, but mm-hmm. that's how I'm using it.
I'm, sure.
You know, and I'm if, you know, if you paid for the material, you might as well look at all of it, right?
But the point I want to make about those videos is that since they are just, again, more of an overview of the domains, it pulls out all the most important testable material
right.
from the domain.
Right.
So it's almost like you're in the weeds with the short videos.
Yep.
In the video library, and then you zoom out a little bit and you see the whole forest and how things kind of, you know, come together and all the connections across the domain on all the stuff that is really important for the exam.
Right. So if we harken back to domain one, we mm-hmm. start talking about the risk management and, mm-hmm. and quantified risk management. There's all those formulas back there mm. that I need to sit through those lectures.
Sure.
Because those were very helpful. And once you've seen those lectures, it's very intuitive.
Yeah, sure.
And I thought that the cryptography lectures were also helpful to go through things, even though I already knew a lot of the stuff that was yep. in there.
Yeah, exactly. And another point is that, like, you basically want to bank time on the easy questions. Like, on exam day, you want to answer the ones that you know really well as quickly as possible, right?
Right.
So that when you're struggling or wrestling between two answer choices, you have a little bit extra time to kind of make that decision. So basically, by really owning your strengths, it actually lets you go faster on test day,
right.
which helps you with your weaker areas.
Yes.
So, Joe, I would normally end the episode by asking you if you have any content questions about domain three of what you studied, but I should be asking you because you're the expert. So we'll just end it there. We look forward to continuing your journey and learning next time about domain four.
That's my Hacking Humans co-host, Joe Kerrigan, with N2K's Sam Meisenberg. Tony Valecha is CEO of Cyberproof, and in today's sponsored Industry Voices segment, he joins us to explore some of the pain points that CISOs and CIOs are experiencing and how they can improve their cyber readiness.
The landscape is changing dramatically for companies here in the U.S. that are public. For example, the SEC rules were just rolled out, so if you are talking in the CISO circles, they're worried about potential criminal liability as well as all the new requirements that are coming and how, you know, they have to be very careful about understanding what's material and what's not. More generally, I think CISOs are struggling with the fact that there's just a massive explosion of new types of attacks. I can rattle off a few statistics here. We have a threat intelligence team, so we keep track of some of this ourselves. And over the last few months, we've had over 2,400 percent increase in number of posts in dark web forums about ChatGPT. So you're seeing, as you know, ChatGPT got started last year. So you're seeing a rapid increase in the curiosity and ways things you can do, although we're not seeing the attacks and things happen. But you are seeing things like 135% surge in social engineering attacks. Many of these use ChatGPT to get better, right? So it's much easier to create an attack, ask it to write something, and it's much more effective. We used to be able to count on misspellings and things like that. We're seeing a fairly big increase in the types of attacks coming from the conflicts there, in Ukraine and probably Israel as well, but going from around 9.8% to 46% of the types of attacks. And these tend to be more advanced persistent threat type of attacks. And the other one I'll just throw out is there 78% of organizations that were attacked by ransomware were targeted by multifaceted types of extortions, right? So they not only attack you and come in with an attack and lock up your data, they also steal the data and then they hold you ransom for bringing your data back, but also, you know, whether they're gonna leak it. On top of that, they've been working with both IT and OT, so we're seeing different types of endpoints and devices target. So from an attacker standpoint, there's just a tremendous amount of change in things that are happening. Now, the other thing that I'll mention is there are, in the security space in general, CISOs are generally buying preventative solutions and things like that. There are just so many out there. And many are starting to question, are there too many? Have I bought too many? Do I have them all implemented? And can I keep layering? So you're starting to see a little bit of a worry about maybe I need to consolidate some of this and bring it together. We're also seeing, as usual, a lack of skilled labor in our industry. You just cannot find people. And these are complex skills to be able to diagnose types of attacks or even to be able to develop secure architectures. We've always had kind of a cost problem. Nobody wants to pay for cyber insurance in a corporation because it's like buying insurance. You hope you don't get attacked, but you have to do the basics around regulatory compliance, but you have that. But we're seeing bring in more and more data to be able to defend ourselves, and this gets very expensive in terms of the core solution like SIEMs within security operations. I kind of mentioned the explosion of endpoints, but you can imagine, I like to say, even the car is the endpoint these days, right? Because now you have self-driving cars that are talking to the internet and to the cloud applications, and these become various new ways of creating threats to our environment. And finally, I'll just mention this, but the attacks are getting faster, meaning what used to happen over months, low and slow, is now happening very fast with the use of Gen AI. So multifaceted problem that CISOs have, it's growing in every dimension you can think of.
Can we tackle the terminology itself? I mean, in your view, what comes under the umbrella when you say cyber readiness? What does that entail?
I like to follow the NIST model, actually. And you're actually seeing that what's coming under the security umbrella is expanding. Regulatory compliance has always been there. It's everything from just making sure your users are properly trained or your people are properly trained to understand and, you know, not create errors when it comes to cyber attacks. Generally, though, you're looking at within the compliance, all the things you need to do to make sure you're preventing. There's a setup part, which is, you know, making sure you have your users managed, you know, you have your assets, inventory and covered. But then you need to prevent attacks. So there's generally a layering of technology that CISO selects to be able to make sure that they're preventing the attacks most effectively. But then the security operations, which is the ability to detect and respond to attacks. And then the last dimension of NIST is recover. And I think it's interesting. It's an area of opportunity because many have not really done as much here. But if you think of ransomware, we have to think not only about how I contain the attack so it's not further propagating, but if my systems are impacted, for example, and they're down, I have to bring them up within a certain amount of time so the business impact is minimized. So all of this comes under the realm of a CISO, and I think NIST is one of my favorite models just to be able to handle that. The one area I didn't mention, it's in there, But it's a subcategory, but it's a hot topic, and that's just what I call vulnerability and posture management, which is the ability to make in preventing cyber attacks. You want to make sure that you're not introducing vulnerabilities, and every day there's a new software patch or something that comes out. But in the case of cloud, there's an opportunity because there's posture management, which means you can put your policies out there. And as soon as, you know, a firewall rules changed or something changes, which is outside of your security policy, you can be notified or you can even have auto patching to correct much of that.
Well, let's talk about some of the solutions here. I mean, from your point of view, how can these cybersecurity leaders come at this issue?
Oh, that's a great question. So I'm going to spend probably a little more time on what I call the prevent, detect, and respond, because I think there's a lot of folks that will talk about compliance, and we can talk about compliance and the problem because we're seeing more and more requirements coming in and they're splintered. But let's talk a little more about the really protecting against the actual attacks themselves. Now, one of the key challenges I mentioned before for CISOs is we're just seeing more and more products every day, and which is great because there's innovation. But the challenge is it's up to the CISO to do a lot of the integration of these products, or the CISO or the engineering teams, and to be able to make these solutions work together. So, and it gets complicated because it changes, you know, rapidly. I think we're starting to see, and this is a good thing, some consolidation in the industry. And it's also happening in a space, you know, when you go to the events that CISOs go to, you generally see the same players. But in the new world, you're starting to see players like Microsoft and Google get into the game. So as the hyperscalers start getting involved, they're consolidating. So for example, Microsoft has made many acquisitions of different products and solutions. They're creating an integrated security center. In the case of Google, very similar approach there. They're really built, they've done an acquisition around SOAR. They use their search capability to create really a next generation high performance SIEM. And then they acquired Mandiant, which brings a lot of the intel and data around attacks and security. So they're starting to consolidate from that angle as well. I think one of the things that the opportunity for many of the security specialists today is to start stepping back and taking a more fundamental look. Their organizations are going through what a kind of a cloud-first strategy already. So it's a good opportunity to step back and say, should I rethink, you know, my technology stack? Are there ways to save money at the same time? I think this is critical. All of us, the major complaints when CISOs get together is just, you know, there's only so much budget to do so much. There's only so many people that they can do it. They always feel they're behind the curve and not able to keep up. So I think this becomes an opportunity as we go forward to create those solutions. Now, those solutions are not just they're really falling to prevent, detect, and respond. And frankly, even a recovery area, because cloud offers a number of new ways to set up for recovery.
How do you recommend folks get started here? You know, it seems, I can imagine somebody looking at this and thinking, this is an overwhelming problem. You know, where do I take my first bites or my first nibbles at this? Any words of wisdom there?
You know, unfortunately, what that sort of depends on where you are. But I'd say more fundamentally, I do think it's good to step back because some of this information you're not getting through your normal channels, for example. I think you'll start seeing more and more of it this year as we see the hyperscalers get more deeply involved. You start seeing them at the typical security events. But I think it is time to take a look at the hyperscalers, what they're doing. Does it offer you a different way of looking at some of these problems? One of the more fundamental opportunities or one of the more fundamental trends that I think is driving this is the generative AI trend itself, right? And what that means is you're seeing the advent of these co-pilots. That's what Microsoft calls it. And what they mean is if you are in the process of trying to understand all this, corporations generally have silos. You can have one team is doing vulnerability management, another team is patching, another team that's your security operations. Sometimes for larger corporations, threat hunting and threat intelligence teams are separated. But the ability to have co-pilots that can see across large sets of data, understand language, and be able to interpret and correlate some of these things at that level is, I think, is a game changer. So when we start looking at problems in cybersecurity, one of them is just getting data into a place or a structure that, when I talked about integrating these products, that it's more useful. And there are opportunities to save money when you do that on cloud, right? Because you can set up the large scale data lakes are being designed for logs and other sources. And there's means of storing that and potentially even talking with the CTO about structuring the same log sources for both IT and OT to can be used together. So there are, I think my first recommendation is take a look into the opportunities that many of the clouds, the new solutions that are coming out in cloud offer you. I think it's a fundamental shift. I still think there's a best of breed approach in various different areas. So it totally depends on what you are and what you've already procured, you know, where your licenses are when they expire and what's been integrated and implemented properly. But I think a very fundamental recommendation is just take a look at what this new trend of consolidation, hyperscalers and things are starting to deliver.
That's Tony Valecha from Cyberproof. And now, a word from our sponsor, Zscaler, the leader in cloud security. Cyber attackers are using AI in creative ways to compromise users and breach organizations. In a security landscape where you must fight AI with AI, the best AI protection comes from having the best data. Zscaler has extended its zero-trust architecture with powerful AI engines that are trained and tuned by 500 trillion daily signals. Learn more about Zscaler Zero Trust Plus AI to prevent ransomware and AI attacks. Experience your world secured. Visit zscaler.com/zero-trust-AI. And finally, a ransomware attack has left Sweden's exclusive liquor distributor scrambling, potentially leaving the shelves of the nation's sole alcohol retailer sparse by week's end. The cyber assault has been attributed to a North Korean group by the distributor's CEO and threatens not just the availability of spirits, but also the essential paper bags needed to carry them home. This digital drama unfolds as Sweden revamps its National Cybersecurity Center, integrating it with the country's signals intelligence to enhance its cyber defense, following what the government criticized as subpar performance. The urgency for better security measures was underscored earlier this year when Tietoevry, a major cloud services provider in Sweden, also fell victim to a ransomware attack, impacting numerous customers and forcing some store closures. So, clearly, Sweden's digital defenses are being tested as they work to cork these cybersecurity shortfalls. And that's the CyberWire. For links to all of today's stories, check out our daily briefing at thecyberwire.com. We'd love to know what you think of this podcast. You can email us at cyberwire@n2k.com. N2K Strategic Workforce Intelligence optimizes the value of your biggest investment, your people. We make you smarter about your team while making your team smarter. Learn more at n2k.com. This episode was produced by Liz Stokes. Our mixer is Trey Hester, with original music by Elliot Peltzman. Our executive producers are Jennifer Iben and Brandon Karp. Our executive editor is Peter Kilpie, and I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here tomorrow.